Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. And today's episode is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game, a place where you can play numerous different fantasy football games on different leagues in Europe, as well as the Champions League next week, and also a place where you can read a lot of excellent articles on Serie A from a lot of different writers, most of whom we've had the pleasure of welcoming on the podcast. So today, we had an intra-week matches in Serie A. We'll talk about those. We are recording this right as Sassuolo and Spal are facing off and before the Empoli-Milan match. So we won't get to those, but there was a lot of action to talk about, which we'll get to. We have, of course, the great Twitter questions from our listeners. And we're going to end the podcast with an excellent interview with one of my bosses over at The Athletic, George Kirashi. I felt like we haven't talked a lot about writing and journalism, and there's a lot of our listeners who are into that. So we're going to address that a little bit towards the end of the podcast. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by the co-host, the producer of the podcast, Alex Goldberg. So Alex, a lot to chew on, but I really want to focus on this great Juve-Napoli match. I feel like, in a way, I almost felt like it snuck up on us. I can't believe it's already here. Both teams are off to a fantastic start. So before I get your prediction, and we'll get to the predictions at the end of this segment, I have to ask you, what are you most looking forward to seeing in this game?
Well, first off, I am licking my chops for this Juve-Napoli fixture on Saturday. I cannot wait. The storyline I am most interested in heading into this match is, how will Max Allegri approach this Napoli? This is not the same Napoli he's been used to facing these last handful of years. Of course, a totally different identity under Maurizio Sarri. Totally different formation. Sarri, of course, played that 4-3-3 formation. And now Carlo Ancelotti is really switching things up. He's constantly switching things up from personnel to formation. So it definitely will be a little bit different for Allegri to get ready for this game than it has been in the past. If anybody can do it, it's Max Allegri. I think he's one of the best managers, period. He might be the most versatile manager, and he's probably one of the best prepared managers in terms of thinking about who his opposition is, and then that kind of dictates how he heads into the match with his own team, the players he plays, the formations he plays. He's very good at match-by-match preparation. However, Carlo Ancelotti is just no slouch, and I really am excited to see the new contrast between Juve and Napoli. Of course, Lorenzo Insigne has now been playing farther up front. You could almost call him a second striker. He's been playing more with Milik. Yesterday, you saw four midfielders start for Napoli, and Fabian Ruiz, Alon, Diawara, and Zielinski. So that's a new curveball. That's something certainly Maurizio Sarri was not doing. He was always playing Insigne at left wing, Mertens at striker, and Cajon on the right wing. So once again, this is just not the same Napoli that Juve and Allegri were used to facing. So I'm really interested in how prepared Juve will be for this new Napoli.
Very interesting. Yeah, I definitely agree on the lineups. Ancelotti so far has used a completely different, not completely different, but he's used a different lineup in every match this season. Yesterday, we got a start from Fabian Ruiz. We saw the right back that looks like Odell Beckham Alcui. He was pretty impressive, actually. I feel like he brings a completely different style than Hizaj. So it's kind of fascinating, and I'm with you. I'm very curious to see what Ancelotti does. Allegri, you know, is without his security blanket, Khedira, so it'll be interesting to see what he does in the midfield. So the tactical battle is certainly interesting. I have to say, and I tweeted this yesterday, this summer, and I think it's because I'm so enamored with Sarri, you know, when you're in love, you kind of don't look at things objectively. I really did. It took me a while to talk myself into Napoli being even a top four team, never mind the top two team. And they look like the only team that can realistically keep up with Juve. But, you know, I had my first epiphany when I did my blue chip and red chip players. And I was like, I just can't ignore how much talent Napoli has. And Ancelotti, to his credit, we talked about it on Monday, has really gotten everyone in the squad involved. And he talked about it yesterday, too, in the post-match comments. The only, you know, players that have been consistently employed are Koulibaly and Insigne. And the way Insigne is playing, you simply can't take him off. But beyond that, the whole team feels part of the project. So I'm very intrigued to see what's going to happen at the Allianz Stadium between these two teams. I think it's just a great advertisement for Serie A that both these teams are getting there in such strong form. Juve has started the season winning 7 matches in all competitions. This is the first time they've done this since the 1930-1931 season. Napoli, other than their loss to Sampdoria, which was rather shocking, have won every match in Serie A, and they've been very impressive. So it should be a fantastic game. So I'm going to put you on the spot first, Alex. We also have our friend Thousand Names in a little bit with his prediction. So I'm going to put you on the spot. What do you think is going to happen?
All right, David, my crystal ball tells me Juventus are going to win 2-1 on Saturday. Kind of a boring prediction, I know, but I'll add a curveball to it. I'll say Napoli go up 1-0, and for much of the game, Napoli are leading 1-0. But then Juve, who never ever panic, they never panic in a game, and they never panic in the whole width of the season. Juve mount a comeback, they win 2-1, they get a goal from Ronaldo. I can't tell you if it's going to be the winner or not. My crystal ball does not go that in-depth, but they get a goal from Ronaldo, who will play another full 90. He doesn't play next week in the Champions League. He's suspended for that tie, so he'll give it absolutely everything for 90 minutes. And then the other goal I'm predicting is from your boy, the big game scorer, Mario Mandzukic. If it's a big game, who are you going to call on for a goal? Mario Mandzukic will help Juve beat Napoli 2-1. Juve win in a comeback. That's my prediction, David. What about you?
So I've been absolutely atrocious with my picks this season. So my gut tells me I'm kind of, I like your prediction. My gut tells me that Juve is going to win closely. But because I've been so poor this season and I feel like I've really had an epiphany with Napoli, I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw on this match. I don't feel great about it either way. But I'm going to go against my best instinct on this one. So it should be a terrific game. This one's going to take place on Saturday. So we'll talk a lot about it next week. We're going to bring in a guest to cover both the Napoli and the Juve side of things next week. So I'm looking forward to breaking it down.
David, it sounds like you have some Alvaro Morata-type confidence there on your game picks. I tweeted yesterday, if he starts trying not to score, maybe he will score. Maybe it's just the reverse.
Yes, the George Costanza phenomenon.
Exactly.
The opposite.
Exactly. Good analogy there. All right, David. Well, as you said, we had an Inter week here, and I don't mean Inter Milan. I mean we had Serie A midweek. So it's a rare Thursday edition of Winners and Losers. Who do we got?
Yeah, so we actually are going to start with Inter. They played against Fiorentina the first match. They won a fairly controversial match with VAR. Fiorentina, you know, had a lot of recriminations. We try not to get into too much those sorts of things on the podcast, so I'm going to focus on the winners of the match. And Mauro Icardi, clearly one of them, got on the score sheet for the first time in Serie A, building on the confidence from the Champions League match. I thought Brozovic had a really strong performance. On the podcast, we've been on the bandwagon for a while that it really feels that as Brozovic goes, so does Inter, and he had a strong performance in that game there. So look, you know, just because I'm much higher on Napoli than I was, say, July and August, I'm not taking away the fact that I am pretty confident that Inter is going to be a team to be reckoned with this season, not for the Serie A title, but I do think they're going to be there in the mix for second, third place, potentially. They've won 3 games in a row. Let's see if they can keep the momentum going. And then a team that absolutely needed to turn things around was Roma, playing at home against Frosinone, won convincingly in this match. Di Francesco, winner, pretty bold, benched Dzeko in a pretty important match. So he's a winner. That gives him a little bit of leeway. The derby coming up over the weekend and the Champions League match. Let's see how he does there, but I definitely think this win buys some time. We had Under with a fantastic goal to start the match, gave Roma some confidence. Pastore with another back heel goal. I just picture him that's like the only thing he practices at Trigoria now at Roma. See, a lot of Roma fans are like, yeah, these goals are great, but that's the only thing you're bringing to the table. In any event, it was a fantastic goal, so he's a winner as well. Then we had Napoli defeating Parma at home. We mentioned Insigne has been absolutely on fire. And then Milik, superb goals, off to a strong start to the season. Ancelotti, you know, Milik, of all the Napoli attackers, is the only kind of classic number nine that Ancelotti has gravitated to in his career. Another strong performance there. You know, we've always known that if Milik can stay healthy, he's an absolute force to be reckoned with. I've been enamored with him for a while. Milinkovic-Savic still holds the title of my favorite Serie A player, but Milik's making a strong push behind him. Then Juve, of course, we mentioned 7 wins to start the season. Dybala really needed a goal as well, scored in good fashion. You know, pretty intriguing that he played, you know, in the 3-5-2 as a striker. Probably better suited for that than the 4-3-3 as a winger. I'm still on the camp that, you know, Mandzukic, who's playing as the central striker, alternating with Ronaldo on the wing. I think Dybala can do that too, although he's fairly small. At Palermo, he played as a central striker, and I think he can do it at Juve. And also, we want to give a shout-out to Joao Cancelo, played on the left wing. What a player. I mean, I think, you know, if he gets a little bit better defensively, he could really be one of the best wing backs, not just in Serie A, but in all of Europe. Had a strong performance playing on the left. What more can you say about Genoa striker Piątek? He's been, I think, on our winners and losers segment every single time this season, dating back to his performance in the Coppa Italia. He has now 6 goals in his first 5 Serie A matches in Serie A. That puts him really in elite company. Another player that did this was Brazilian legend Zico, who played for Udinese in the 80s, one of the best Brazilian players, you know, up there as a Brazilian legend. So Piątek matched him. I was reading this interesting article on him from Marco Bovicelli, my colleague on the Marzio site who covers the teams in Genova. And, you know, Piątek came with very low expectations, then come for a big transfer fee. Instead of flying in, he drove to Genoa with his girlfriend. So what a start to the season. Genoa president Preziosi, who never turns down big offers, must be really thinking of a massive plusvalenza at some point next year. So he's definitely a winner there. We had Lazio's win at Udinese. Simone Inzaghi did a lot of turnover. Milinkovic-Savic and Immobile were benched. So was Lucas Lleva. Correa had a great goal, started a match. Lazio does have some pretty intriguing depth this season. Curious to see how Inzaghi uses them. So Correa and Lazio's depth are winners. Flip side on one more from the Cagliari match. Goalkeeper Cragno, who we've mentioned a few times on the pod, saved the penalty in the end. I think he's a very promising keeper. I think he could take the leap in the summer to a much bigger club. Definitely a keeper to watch for a top Serie A team or maybe one abroad. I didn't watch the match, but someone who's getting a lot of praise is Sampdoria defender Anderson, who they say could be kind of their new version of Skriniar. On the loser side, I think people, Atalanta fans, should be worried at this point. They couldn't beat Torino at home. You know, they had an impressive comeback against Milan, but they just don't look like themselves this season. I think we can be officially worried about Atalanta. They do have a lot of depth, especially up front, but there's just not the spark that we saw from them last season. And 3 teams in the race to avoid relegation that should be really concerned. Chievo, of course, had the point deduction. They keep losing. Bologna lost to Juve. That in and of itself isn't a problem, but they've been very mediocre this season. And Frosinone, who have yet to score this season at all. I think these 3 teams are going to be in the battle to avoid relegation throughout the season. If I had to pick which 3 teams are going down right now, which is way too soon, those would be my 3 picks. And also Udinese, they've gotten off to a pretty good start, but if Lasagna and DePaul don't have an amazing match, there's really not much there. So those are our winners and losers intra-week for the matches that we just saw. And again, as I mentioned, we're recording this before the Milan match and the Sassuolo Spal one.
All right, David. Well, we really hardly ever have this. We're going to go from winners and losers, which of course recaps our past Serie A games. And we're going to jump right into our game picks with you and Thousand Names looking ahead to this weekend.
So we're covering all bases on the podcast with the picks. You have Napoli. I have it as a draw. I think Juve fans shouldn't be that surprised to see that Thousand Names pick Napoli to win. I think you guys shouldn't always take him too seriously. So I don't know if he's joking it or not. For what it's worth, I've met Thousand Names in person in Turin, but now he's living in the city of Napoli. So he has Napoli winning 2-3 with goals by Chiellini, Pjanic, Koulibaly, and a brace by Insigne. His comment is that Ronaldo's going to miss a penalty, that the bluff of the Portuguese player is going to be out in the open for everyone to see, and that Allegri is going to be humiliated also by Ancelotti. In Italian, Juve Napoli 2-3, Chiellini, Pjanic, Koulibaly, Insigne, doppietta, Ronaldo sbaglia rigore, smascherato il bluff del portoghese, Allegri umiliato pure da Ancelotti, sgodazzo. So that's that match. You guys know my pick. I have it as a draw. Next up, we have the derby della capitale, Roma-Lazio. Thousand Names has it 3-0, goals by Dzeko, Under, and Manolas. That the crisis at Roma is going to be completely surpassed, that Di Francesco is going to make fun of Simone Inzaghi, and that Totti is going to be in tears after this match. In Italian, Roma-Lazio 3-0, Dzeko, Under, Manolas, crisi definitivamente superata, Di Francesco sbeffeggia Simone Inzaghi, Totti in lacrime. I'm going to go with a draw in this match. Usually in derby matches, I always tend to favor a little bit the underdog. Maybe that's a stupid bias on my part, but I think this is going to be a draw. Last match picked by Thousand Names, Inter at home against Cagliari, has it 4-0 with a poker of goals from Icardi. And the comment is, Maurito against the useless teams never fails. He's going to end up being the leading goal scorer in Serie A, and that Spalletti is starting to set his sights on first place. In Italian, Inter-Cagliari 4-0, 4 gol di Icardi, Maurito contro le squadre inutili non sbaglia mai, capocannoniere del campionato, Spalletti vede il primo posto. I'm going to have Inter winning as well, but I'm going to have a 2-0 and I'll give a goal to Icardi, and I'm going to go with Perisic on a goal. So let's see if I can turn it around. I've been absolutely dreadful with my picks. And something that is never dreadful is the questions that we get from our listeners. As always, you can send us questions on Serie A. We're already getting a few on transfers here or there. TV, music, journalism, podcasting, you name it, send us in questions, but make sure you use the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start off with this one. This is very interesting. Should Serie A consider playing a few games abroad in order to expand their brand internationally?
So this was brought up by Juve president Andrea Agnelli. He said this is something the league is considering. Our friends at Italian Football TV tweeted this. There was a lot of interesting responses on this. So, this is just my personal opinion. And, there are two things about me that you should know. A, I'm probably one of the least nationalistic people out there. I don't think just because you're born in a country, you get any special privilege. That's just the lottery, in my opinion. And I'm all about the business side, branding and marketing, which I know to a lot of fans, that's like a third rail. And I respect that. Maybe I'm more cynical and don't look at sports that much just as an athletic competition. I definitely see the financial side to it. So me personally, I'm totally in favor of a few Serie A games abroad. And I want to stress one or two a season, not more. I think they can be strategically placed maybe right before the winter break and another one before the international break. I think you have to target the right markets. Indonesia, they're like the middle. Asia is a great place. A game here in the U.S. I think would go a long ways. I feel like Serie A has a lot of momentum with the CR7 signing. They need to do more for branding. So I'm in favor of this, but again, not more than a game or two. I think the NBA has started this a long time ago. They started doing, you know, friendlies in Paris with Magic Johnson and Jordan. Then it became to an NBA game in London, and we see that with the NFL. So that's kind of the business model that I have in mind for this. Again, I totally respect people that are like, oh, a game without ultras isn't a game. But look, you know, look at that match, Napoli-Fiorentina, which for a variety of reasons, there was barely any attendance. So when there are some matches where there are some very serious security concerns, you know, I think those matches, you know, if you use them as an opportunity to develop the brand abroad, is that such a bad thing? So again, that's just my opinion, and I get why some people feel otherwise.
All right, well, that question, David, perfectly segues to this next question. David, why are stadiums in Italy often less than full?
Well, look, it goes back to the fact that it's not a good fan experience in a lot of ways. A lot of the stadiums are old. It's not easy to get a ticket. Like in Italy, you need to have a tessera del tifoso, like an ID that identifies you as a safe fan that can go to the stadium. If the like Napoli fans aren't allowed to travel to Turin for this match, if they come from the region around Napoli, it's not exactly a great experience. And look, I'm friends with a lot of ultras. There's a lot of, you know, great things, atmosphere that they bring and all. But, you know, in some cases, it's not, again, the most fan-friendly place to take a family. Also, the scheduling, they schedule the games at the last second, you know, when the game's going to take place. So, again, that's another reason why I'm not so opposed to games abroad. I just don't think, you know, everything's so exactly perfect in Italy that it wouldn't work. And another comment on this is just because the attendance isn't good in some Serie A matches doesn't mean that it wouldn't work abroad. To me, all the reasons why attendance is less than perfect in a lot of Serie A stadiums don't apply at all abroad. As a matter of fact, you take those abroad, you get rid of all those problems.
All right. All right, David, how about this for a Twitter question? Should Juve look for ways to expand their current stadium capacity? 41,000 isn't enough.
Well, look, you know, when Juve opened their stadium, they hadn't won a title in a while. They had struggled. They had the old Delle Alpi Stadium, which was a massive stadium. It was half empty. It wasn't a great place to go watch a game by any means. They wanted, you know, to have a stadium that would they felt could always be packed. And keep in mind, some of Champions League matches and even last season weren't sold out in Juventus Stadium because, you know, a lot of Juve fans aren't from Turin. They travel from all over Italy. It's not that easy to do that on a Wednesday night. On weekends, it's a lot easier. You go to Juve match, you'll see a ton of buses going all over Italy taking fans. So I can understand why they did the stadium the way it is, but now Juve are victims of their own success in a way. I know Adam Digby tweeted about this. You know, a lot of the ultras are protesting the big increases in prices, and I totally understand that. But, you know, to me, it really comes down to supply and demand. A lot of people want to go to see games at Juve Stadium from abroad as well, and I'm not a nationalistic guy. To me, those people have just as much a right to go see those matches. And also, Juve spent a ton last summer. They really are trying to raise their profile, bringing in better players. They want to take the leap to become, you know, like a Real Madrid and Barcelona, and they don't have that many places where they can bring in revenue, and the stadium is one of them with the tickets. So again, I'm very sympathetic to Juve fans also because when they travel to away games, they get gouged because the prices to go see Ronaldo are very high. So I totally get all that. But you know, it really is supply and demand and finances come into play with this.
Well, another great segue there, David, because you said Adam Digby tweeted about that, but he also tweeted about this next question, as did many, and it is, could the Dybala for Pogba swap actually happen?
Yeah, it's a great question. And look, you know my philosophy with transfer rumors early in the season, so much can change. Dybala was banned for a bit. This isn't the first time that's happened, but he's back starting again now. His situation can really change. Look at Pogba, him and Mourinho right now, their relationship, you know, is pretty much pretty much hardly, and it will probably will never get resolved. But look, what if Mourinho moves on and Manchester United brings in a coach that is totally dedicated to Pogba? Things can change rather quickly. On paper, yeah, it does make sense. Juve could use that extra great midfielder. They're stacked in the attack. Bernardeschi is looking like someone, if he keeps this up, that could replace Dybala permanently. So on paper, it makes sense. But again, keep in mind that things can change very rapidly with transfers. And between now and January, a ton could change. Transfers of that magnitude hardly ever happen in January. Both those players would be cup-tied in the Champions League. Next summer, maybe. But again, so much can change between now and then.
If I'm Manchester United, I have to side with Pogba. I don't think Pogba has necessarily been perfect in all of this. He might not be the easiest player to manage. But look at Mourinho's history. This is what Mourinho brings. I'm not going to go on a Mourinho rant, David. Don't worry. But the constant is Mourinho with the drama. That's my take on it.
I'm with you there. And look, you know, I am a Pogba defender. I think people know that Mourinho is on my list of my most favorite coaches. I certainly respect them. Look, if my life depended on the outcome of just one game, he'd be on the very short list of coaches I'd want to have my life at stake. But you're right. You know, we have the 3 year at a club thing with Mourinho. There's been a lot. Pogba certainly isn't the only talented player he has gotten the most out of. But I'm with you. Pogba also deserves blame in this situation.
For sure. All right. How about this, David? Has Nainggolan lived up to expectations at Inter so far?
Well, it depends what your expectations were. I'm in the camp that Nainggolan last season wasn't that good. I didn't think Roma made such a bad mistake selling him. You know, there was the Spalletti, you know, and certainly because Spalletti has gotten a lot out of him and they sold him to a team they're competing with for a Champions League spot. So in that sense, it was a gamble, but I totally got why Roma did it. So I have to say Nainggolan has actually been a little bit better than I expected. He was injured to start the season. I think he's been one of Inter's best players when he played. So if he keeps this up, I have to say that it's a slightly better than I expected from him, because if you told me, what's more likely, Nainggolan has a great season or Nainggolan has a terrible season? I would have said it's much more likely he has a terrible season. So if it's something in between, and you know, if you were grading him like they do in the papers in Italy from 1 to 10, you would give him a 6.5, so a slightly above average. That's what he's been. I think he can push himself to a 7. So I have to say he's been better than what my expectations were.
Yeah, for me, the key for Nainggolan is Spalletti. I think under Spalletti, he really is definitely an above-average midfielder and at times a game-changer. I think Spalletti is very key in all of this. So, David, the next Twitter question is, what do you make of Totti's comments about Franco Bandini? What should James Pallotta do?
Okay, so if you guys haven't followed, there's this great book that came out today on Totti's autobiography written by a fantastic journalist in Italy that I hope we have on the podcast soon, Paolo Condò, who also writes for The Athletic, an absolute class act, a great writer. So the book came out, and one of the explosive comments was that Totti wrote about Baldini. And for those of you that don't know, he's a consultant for Roma, worked at Spurs a little bit. He's kind of a Pallotta's consigliere, kind of like in The Godfather, although Monchi is the sporting director. Baldini is actually also who picked Di Francesco as coach. So Baldini is the one that essentially told Totti, we're going to force you to retire. Spalletti's on the same page, I'm the same page, we're going to make you retire. And Totti, of course, if you know anything about him, wasn't too happy about this. So he wrote about him, and after this came out, Baldini offered to resign, because if you F with Totti in Rome, that's like a death sentence. So Baldini tried to resign, Pallotta won't let him, so let's see what happens. I'm in the camp that, you know, Baldini isn't in Rome, he's based in London, he's just a consultant. I don't even know if he has an official title at Rome. I think he can stay that way if Pallotta wants someone, you know, to talk to and get some advice. I think he can stay in that role.
All right. All right, David, let's move away from football for our last Twitter question. Let's move to TV. What are some of your favorite TV shows right now? Are you watching The Deuce on HBO?
So great question. I have to say, I have to admit, I'm slacking on my TV catching up between the games and a PlayStation, and now I'm waiting for FIFA, who's been has already been delivered at my house. By the way, I'm 41 years old. It's kind of pathetic. But in any event, I'm a big TV buff, but I'm trying to catch up on shows. So one show that I'm almost caught up on is Better Call Saul. Fantastic show. Really enjoyed. Deuce is next on my list because I love David Simon and I love James Franco. Both of them are two artists that I really respect. So that's next on my list. So as always, thanks to all our listeners for sending in Twitter questions. Please keep them coming with the CalcioLand hashtag. We appreciate your input. We appreciate your reviews and you guys advertising the podcast. And without further ado, we're going to end the podcast with a great interview with one of my bosses from The Athletic, George Karashiu, who is going to be joining us in a second. We're going to get into Serie A a little bit, but talk about journalism and writing, a topic that a lot of our listeners enjoy. Okay, so as promised, for the interview segment of the podcast, I'm joined by one of my bosses over at The Athletic, a place that I've really enjoyed writing for, George Karashiu. We are going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the world of football slash soccer, since he's based in the U.S., but really talk a little bit more about writing, a topic that we used to discuss a lot on the podcast. So, George, thank you so much for joining us. It's a real pleasure to have you back on the podcast.
David, it's an honor. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Awesome. So, George, when we had you on, it was a few months ago. I think I had asked you this already, like kind of the growth of soccer in the United States. But I feel like there's even more momentum since the last time we chatted. Like, I thought the World Cup, despite the U.S. not being there, was a big success here. You know, I'm based in Boston, just looking at the people I interact with, you know, not people that follow the sport. They were really into it. They understand it. You know, NBC does amazing coverage of the Premier League. Now we have Serie A on ESPN, which is such a big upgrade from what we had in the past. Mm-hmm. So from where I'm sitting, I see a lot of momentum. I also feel like some of the other sports, especially the NFL and baseball, are struggling a little bit. I really see a great opportunity. And, you know, over at The Athletic, the soccer coverage is amazing. So I want to ask you, as someone that's really in the weeds and the business, how do you kind of see the momentum of the sport here?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's easy for me. I'm so in it that there are always signs to be pessimistic about. You know, it's easy to pick out things like not qualifying for the World Cup and, you know, the way that MLS make some of its decisions sometimes. You can always find reasons to doubt. But I think that if you look at some of the big indicators, there's some reasons to be hopeful too. I mean, look, we haven't hired a U.S. national team coach, and I think we're playing all these friendlies and kind of wasting some opportunities against really good competition. But at the same time, you've got, you know, last Champions League match day, you had Christian Pulisic scoring admittedly a fluke of a goal, and Weston McKennie getting an assist. That's like the best Champions League day the United States has had since, I don't know, since Kurovsky won it without even dressing for Dortmund way back in the day, right? So, you know, that's one thing. You've got the fact that we're going to have the World Cup in 8 years, and that's a target for us to sort of look forward to, and hopefully that will compel some of these organizations like U.S. Soccer and MLS to invest a little more heavily, because they might see that they'll get a bigger return than if it were being held in, I don't know, China or Australia or Italy, you know. So on a couple of fronts, there are some exciting developments, and then there's also the USL, right? Which you know, we published a story not too long ago detailing some of the things that are a little bit concerning about that league, especially as they pertain to, you know, players being paid and sort of getting health benefits and all the things that players need to be secure. But at the same time, it is growing very fast. It's now the biggest league by far in terms of teams. They're expanding to a D3. And so you see, you know, and to me, the most important thing about that, and then I'll let you jump back in because I know I've been talking a long time, is that, you know, you have teams, professional teams, popping up in parts of the country that have never had them before. And that is so crucial to not only to like exposing new people to soccer as fans, but also to giving kids, you know, some inspiration and you know, a pathway, not a great pathway yet, but a pathway to realizing their dreams. And you know, who knows how valuable that is. You can't put a dollar amount on that, in my opinion.
Absolutely. So now let's shift gears a little bit to what's going on at the Athletics. So, you know, when you were on the podcast a while back, the site was getting started. The focus was, you know, on what's going on in MLS and soccer in general in the U.S. There's a lot of focus on the Premier League and La Liga. So not surprising, because those were really what's most followed here in the U.S. But I'm thrilled to see that there's been much more Serie A coverage as time went on. So tell me a little bit, what has been the feedback, the reaction that you are getting from readers and people who follow the Athletic on Serie A? And let me ask you, were you surprised by it?
I mean, for me personally, you know, even though we started with Premier League and La Liga and MLS especially, you know, Serie A has always been something I've wanted us to grow into, and we are slowly, I would say. You were one of our first writers to focus on that, along with Paolo Bandini, and we've since hired Paolo Condo to do some writing for us, and he's wonderful. And, you know, honestly, soccer is a little bit of a strange fit for the Athletic, because the Athletic's model, as you know, is to cover teams and leagues, as opposed to countries or, you know, whole, you know, it just doesn't fit like a glove. So, you know, the only team in Italy that we cover on a regular basis, like, you know, once to twice a week is Juventus. And I want to expand that. I think that in your most recent piece for us, David, you mentioned that, you know, there's been a resurgence in recent years. I mean, the fact that Higuain has gone from Napoli to Juve to AC Milan shows that there are teams that are really have higher aspirations than maybe they did for some years in the previous decade. And that's a really exciting development to see, you know, what is a really historic and great league sort of emerging again in the Champions League, in Europe, in the world. So, I mean, you know, the feedback has been great. But I would say that we're still feeling it out. We're still trying to decide it. I think you got some of these comments too. It was like, hey, that was, you know, I think I saw some people say, hey, your last column on Serie A was kind of, I think somebody called it defensive. I don't think I would agree with that. It was more of a general overview maybe someone who already knew all that stuff could read as defensive, because you're explaining stuff that seems pretty basic if you already know it. But I think that, you know, we're still trying to figure out the balance. What, you know, how much are we trying to cater to really hardcore fans of Juve and some of these other teams, and how much are we trying to inform and educate people who are interested in soccer and maybe don't know that much about, for instance, what Paolo Condo wrote about in his first piece, which is Napoli and you know, the coaching situation there, and how this is such an exciting time for this team that made a big challenge last season to Juve, but is going through a significant transition with Sarri leaving the club. So, you know, we're trying to find that balance. And I think that until we get it right, it hasn't been all positive comments. They've been constructive comments. And that's the, honestly, that's the kind of comment that I found most helpful.
Yeah. And I'm with you. I thought those comments in a way were really refreshing, because it's like, maybe I'm not giving enough credit to the readers, and there's many more who get past those cliches. So I agree completely. Yeah. And look, in a way, those comments were actually really good. And it told me, you know, I need to give more credit to people. So you mentioned Paolo Condo and a fantastic piece on Ancelotti. Basically, the thesis is, look, he's been at a lot of huge clubs, but this is probably the biggest challenge of his career at Napoli, replacing mm-hmm. Sarri. So mm-hmm. for those that aren't that familiar with Paolo, he's a legend in journalism in Italy. Today, the timing's perfect. His book, The Totti Autobiography, came out. Paolo Condo wrote it with Totti. He's on Sky Sport with my friend Gianluca Di Marte. I was in Italy. I saw him on TV there as well. And he's a voter for the Ballon d'Or. He's a juror for that. I could be wrong, but I think he might be the only Italian journalist that gets to vote for that. So it's beyond impressive. So a few weeks ago, you sent me a text saying, hey, you know, we're expanding Serie A, we're bringing him in. And I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. For those that aren't that familiar with The Athletic, I mean, you look at the other sports, they have the top writers in the NBA, you know, they have David Aldridge, they have Shams, who's kind of like the new Woj, like amazing journalist, and Paolo Condo's in line with that. So I have to ask you, George, what made you decide to reach out to him?
You know, I wasn't super familiar with his work until about a year ago. I don't speak Italian, and I don't watch Sky, living here in the U.S., but I heard him on Graham Hunter's podcast, and Graham is another writer for us. He's a Scot who lives in Barcelona and writes a lot about Spain and La Liga.
He's terrific.
He's terrific also. And what I liked about these two guys, they've both been around for a while. They're a little bit older than you and me,
David. Yeah.
And they were just telling stories, you know, and they were just talking about these players, from a position of, you know, maturity that I don't have. I'm in my mid-30s. You know, I don't live in Europe. I don't interview these guys all the time. I don't get, you know, special access to you know, get to know them. And these guys were just talking about these guys in such a familiar way. And I was intrigued. And I thought, you know, I would love to have someone who can write knowledgeably about soccer, but also bring in some of these, I don't know, some of these small personality details that only someone like that would have. And so, you know, in the story about Ancelotti, he mentioned that, you know, he's living in downtown Napoli, or like city center in Napoli, as opposed to out in the suburbs near the training center as his predecessors did. And I thought, wow, that's just a detail that I would never have. It would be, you know, you need some degree of familiarity with the club, with Italian soccer to know that. You know, and his, I gotta say, Paolo said, hey, I'd love to do this. I'd like to try it. I don't know that my English is good enough. And so I reached out to you, David, and to your credit, I mean, you know, you could imagine someone coming to you and saying, hey, we got this guy, he's going to write about something similar to what you're going to write about. And to your credit, you weren't threatened. You were extremely generous to say, hey, however I can help, I'd love to help. And I thought, wow, that's what a team player.
Well, look, and, to me, the idea to say that I write on a site with someone of that caliber, I would have done 95. I mean, I know him just a tiny bit. I reached out to him, and look, his English is really good. So it also encourages me to bring him on the podcast.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's fantastic. And so, you know, his next piece is actually about Totti, and he has that insider knowledge. You know, he spent a lot of time with him, and I think that we're going to get something from him that's just a little different than what we could probably get from a lot of other people. And that's so, as an editor, that's so exciting to me. You know, and as we look at our team, we've got you, we've got the two Paolos, Bandini and Kondo. And as we, you know, I there are a few others that I have on my radar who I'd really love to bring in as we grow. The challenge for us is just, you know, we're covering MLS. We're trying to get to every team there. Yeah. We had someone complaining the other day that we didn't have a Dynamo story because they made the US Open Cup final. And I said, look, you're right. We don't, you know, it's just, we haven't gotten there yet. I think we've gotten 17 or 18 of the 23 MLS teams, but we're just, you know, these are just choices we have to make. And we're doing our best to expand as rapidly as we can and keep the quality high. But you know, the Serie A is so exciting. I, you know, as you said, I'm watching it more and more because it's on ESPN. You know, it's just such a fascinating time to be able to watch, turn on your computer, watch all these different leagues, see these different styles, see these different players you didn't know about, and just get your mind blown on a regular basis. And you know, Serie A is definitely doing that for me. I was watching Spal the other day, and I was like, yeah, this is a team that I only know from Football Manager. You know what I mean? And and they play really. They were playing really attractive football. It was eye opening. And you know, of course, someone listening in Italy is like, oh, yeah, of course they were. It's a good team. But you know, here I am just discovering this, and it's exciting.
Yeah, no, and to piggyback on what you were saying, what I really like on the content on Serie A, and to a certain extent even the other leagues outside of MLS on The Athletic, you're not getting, you know, the typical articles like match reports, quotes and all. Like, I kind of liken it a little bit to what you'd read in the New Yorker, a publication that goes a little bit deeper on random subjects. So if you're into that sort of stuff, definitely check it out. So I want to ask you a couple of questions about writing and what you've learned in the past few months. So you're the managing editor. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, you're a little bit of a jack of all trades. Not only are you editing articles, you're doing recruiting, you're reaching out to writers, making sure the writers are taken care of. So tell me a little bit what you've learned in the past few months. It must be, in a lot of ways, really exciting.
It is. It is. You know, my background is six years ago, I started a soccer magazine, like a print magazine that was, you know, came out a couple times a year. And so running a daily website on soccer is so different. You know, it's a lot more granular. Like, the comparison you made to The New Yorker is very kind. Thank you. But from my perspective, what we've done, what I'm doing now is more day-to-day news stuff, even though I think that in the world of daily soccer websites, yeah, we try to take a longer view. We try to go a little deeper. We try not to, part of it is just the business model. If we it's a subscription site, right? So you need people to feel like, you know, to really believe that they're getting extra value for, because they're paying for it. And you know, that's always top of mind. Yep. When we assign a story, when we edit a story. I think that one of the things that I'm learning a lot, right? And a lot of it has to do with, that's funny. I wonder why this story did so well and this other story that I thought was really good and very exciting maybe didn't perform quite as well. And when I say perform, I don't really mean like how many people read it. That's important to me, but it's also, you know, did people respond with comments that were like, yeah, this was, you know, they tell me they really enjoyed the story. Did they engage with it? I don't know. I'm finding that people are really invested in like the, you know, knowing things about their club and sort of getting an insider view that maybe they you know, using our journalists, I guess, as a window into their club. And so I think a guy like Felipe Cardenas in Atlanta is a good example of that. So Felipe, you know, and we get much better access with MLS clubs than we do with European clubs. I think you can understand why. But Felipe he's Colombian. He lives in Atlanta. He's a Spanish speaker. And it was astounding to me that a club like Atlanta United, who, if your listeners don't know, have Tata Martino as the head coach. They have Miguel Almirón, a very exciting young Paraguayan who's probably going to get sold for a lot of money this winter. They've got Joseph Martinez, a Venezuelan who just set the MLS all-time single season league scoring record. Used to play for Torino, so your listeners might be familiar. They have all these players from South America who don't necessarily speak English, and you know, if they do, they're still much more comfortable getting to know and expressing themselves to a Spanish speaker. So when we went to that market, we thought, man, here's a team getting 70,000 plus people. We got to put a Spanish speaker on this. That seemed like a no-brainer, and I think Felipe has done an amazing job getting into the personalities of some of these people and just sort of peeling back those layers for the fans, and we've seen just a really fantastic response. So that's an example, I guess, of the ways I've had to sort of change my thinking to covering teams on a weekly basis as opposed to, you know, a couple times a year and only when it's a really compelling story. Now we have to try to find what are the stories that are going to be compelling, and we have to do them on a regular basis. So I hope that answers your question. I don't know if I did, but
absolutely. No, very, very interesting. So let me ask you one thing that I've really enjoyed working on the site with you is, you know, having like a really high quality editor. There's you and there's Brooks, who's terrific. And, you know, I'm used to submitting columns in the past. Sometimes I just publish them myself on some sites, yeah, or some stuff I'd send at ESPN. Once in a while, they'd send me back, or in some cases, they just made the changes they wanted to make. Here, it's much more collaborative. I really feel like, you know, with my limited ability, you guys are getting the most out of it, which is great. So I feel like the editor is just a completely different skill set. It's actually something that really fascinates me. So tell me a little bit, you know, I'm assuming being a great writer doesn't by any means mean that you'd be a great editor. So what qualities do you look in that? Because I know Brooks right now is taking care of his baby. So you some people pinch hitting. So tell me a little bit, what's your criteria when you look for someone and say, hey, you know, this guy could be a good editor?
Well, let me just say before you're there, I mean, I think you're right. When I was growing up, you know, and you're reading a lot like you did and you know, you do, you see the name of the writer, but you never see the name of the editor. So, you know, I was thinking, I want to be a writer. This is how this story gets made. This is great. And then when I started out, I worked at a couple of magazines that no longer exist, National Geographic Adventure and Condé Nast Portfolio, a business magazine. And I was starting to learn, and I realized I was working for editors. I was fact checking. I was doing all the things behind the scenes that you don't know about. and I had a couple of really fantastic mentors. After Portfolio, I went to work at a book publishing house. I was a junior editor at HarperCollins. And so I worked for a couple of editors, Bob Rowe, who had been at Sports Illustrated for a decade before, and David Hershey, who published a bunch of great soccer books and sports books at Harper. And working for them, I got to see, oh, this is what an editor does. And basically what you do is you take the writing and you try to make it better, or at least, you know, it's often not making it better necessarily, but like paring it down, getting it simpler, making it clearer. I think of myself as like the first reader. And if I think, I'm trying to anticipate, if I'm reading this and what are the questions I'm going to have? What are the questions you're not answering as a writer? And anticipating those so that when an actual reader does get the story, they're not asking the same questions, if that makes sense. So, it's sort of, you know, and then the reason it's collaborative, and we work with you is because I don't often know the answers to that. I think I might know. And I think, oh, David, I think you mean this, but could we phrase it this way? Cause it's a little more clear. But you may say, oh, no, actually, I meant this other thing, which is a great insight, and I would never have known. And so I just see myself as like a catalyst for the great ideas and the great writing that comes in the first place. You know, when it comes to hiring these other guys who are filling in for Brooks, they're all doing it part time. You know, they're giving me a couple hours a day. I look for two things. One is, are they good writers themselves? That is important, but it's not the only thing. Do they know the game? Are they going to have some idea of what these people are talking about and be able to sort of add to those things and say, oh, you know, you mentioned this, but I wonder if we could also grab in this detail from 3 years before this player, you know, in their career. That soccer knowledge is important, you know, and attention to detail, just a generosity in a sense. Like being an editor is about being generous in a way. Like your name is not going on the thing. So, you know, is this person willing to like give a great idea to somebody else and say, hey, like put this under your name. I know it seems like an obvious thing to do, but, I don't know. It's sort of like a great playmaker versus a great striker. You know, the playmaker will often get credit, but oftentimes what they do is goes overlooked because the person who actually put the ball in the back of the net is, I guess, the writer in my metaphor. It's getting a little tangled here, but
yeah, I'll tell you to anyone who's a writer out there, like, look, you know, you just can't get defensive with these sorts of things. That's what I've learned here. It's like people are just invested in making you better. Look, sometimes a lot of the feedback is like George said, it's just clarifying. In some cases, it's like, okay, this doesn't make sense here. Now, that's really the only way you'll get better. If I just kept submitting my own articles with no editor, or to an editor who just made some minor changes, you're never going to get better. So it's a great work environment there. So George, to kind of sum it up, for those that aren't that familiar with The Athletic, you talked about it earlier, with soccer covering a league, it's a little bit different than in general in the site. They've kind of replaced the sports pages and the local papers in a lot of different cities. There's The Athletic Denver, Athletic Boston, you name it, and they cover all the teams there. It's fantastic. So if you're into American sports, this is incredible. Like I've gone so much into like reading that I didn't in the past since I've been on. I read about the Giants, the Celtics, teams that I follow. It's fantastic. So there's really a lot of available things. And, you know, the fact that it's ad free, I didn't realize like how annoying those ads were until I actually read an article ad free without videos. And you actually can follow along without these interruptions. So anything you want to add to that as to why people should subscribe and how can people do it?
I mean, yeah, I think you hit it on the head. It's the bundle, right? It's like, you're not just getting good soccer coverage. You're getting access to all this other stuff. And I'll sometimes find myself, I'll forget. I'm like, oh, I gotta find out. Like, I live in Tampa, and I don't know if you've been following, but we have this like old journeyman backup quarterback who's been, Fitzpatrick, who's been killing it. And I was like, who is this guy? And I was like, I just Googled his name. I was like, wait a minute. I work for this company. I'm just going to go to the app, and I'm sure someone's written about this. And I did. And it was a great, you know, there are like three great stories on this guy, you know, from different points in his career and in this season. And, you know, it's been a great resource for me in that way. Like I just find myself getting information that I just wouldn't have had otherwise. But it's funny, like I have to train myself like, oh yeah, I don't need the internet necessarily. All I need is this one app that has all of it. So, I mean, that to me has been really eye opening. And I think people, when they realize that they can get a pretty good deal, we have one right now at theathletic.com/soccer expansion. Where if you sign up, you get a free week trial, you get 33% off your first year. They realize that if they're getting this for like $3 a month, it's a pretty great resource. And you get everything. You don't get just soccer. You don't just get whatever you're interested in at the moment. You get everything across the site. And I think that's really a differentiator for us. A lot of local sites, newspapers have tried this. And I think that one of the things that just sets us apart is that universality of what we're offering, and we're expanding pretty quickly. So yeah, I mean, look, I appreciate you giving me a chance to make that pitch. I'd love people to check it out. David's stuff is there, and it's fantastic. And no matter what he says, his abilities are not modest. we wouldn't have begged you to write for us, David, if we thought that. So I appreciate you. Very modest of you, but I mean, you're just one of really a bunch of great writers that we're so thrilled to have working for us, and I hope people will come and check it out.
Yeah, definitely. Look, don't judge my contributions as a reflection on the site, because someone like Paulo Condó, like the chance of reading someone like him in English, like George said, you really don't get that. Of course, everyone listening to the podcast knows Paolo Bandini, but that's the quality that you have across the site, not just on soccer. So listen, George, I can't thank you enough for joining us. Thank you for the opportunity on The Athletic. It's always great to chat with you about the sport and about writing. So thanks again for joining us today.
All right, man. Now get going on your next piece.